Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where you, the investor, get to listen as Chris Perry grills the best and the brightest in the corporate sector to help you find out who's the wheat and who's the chaff. Listen in.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
So on the phone, I have Scott Hurd, who is President and CEO of Westleaf Incorporated. Westleaf is WL on the Venture Exchange. An interesting story for mine that hasn't had a lot of eyeballs so far. Would you agree that's the case?
Yeah, we're newly public and we're building momentum and trying to tell our story every day. So appreciate you having me on.
No problem at all. So for those who have no idea what Westleaf is, why don't you give us the 411?
So Westleaf is one of the few true vertically integrated companies in the Canadian cannabis sector. And what I mean by that is we own and control assets across the entire value chain. We have large-scale indoor cultivation. We have a large-scale R&D processing, extraction, manufacturing, and fulfillment center in Calgary. And then really the cornerstone of our vertically integrated strategy is around our wholly owned retail distribution. And the reason we think retail is the most important component of the entire value chain is really for two reasons. The first is that the federal packaging and advertising restrictions governing licensed producers in Canada are so restrictive that, in our opinion, they're basically selling an undifferentiated product. And what I mean by that is 70% of the packaging today is really Health Canada warning labels.
Right.
And a small allocation for a rather benign brand element that's limited in color and size. And when you compound that with the fact that you can't use traditional advertising mediums to reach consumers, what you have is a market that's incredibly difficult to build brands and align and engage with consumers. So it's our belief that through retail distribution, we get the best opportunity to control the consumer experience and help shape and influence their purchasing habits, ultimately to buy our products and create that demand pull through our vertically integrated supply chain.
Got it. You've, along those lines, came up with the concept of Prairie Records, which is a cannabis retail business model that integrates the old pastime of leafing through album covers to find music that you dig and uses that to share more information on the product that's actually being purchased, right?
That's correct. And how we developed our retail concept was really through a competitive analysis of the Canadian cannabis retail landscape. And we track every single one of our competitors. We've, you know, looked at every single retail concept in the space. And through that analysis, we saw two things. The first is it's highly undifferentiated, what we're seeing in the market from a cannabis retail perspective. And secondly, we could really group our competitors into two distinct buckets. So on one end of the spectrum, everyone's trying to be the quote-unquote Apple store of cannabis.
Uh-huh.
And when you ignore all of these Apple stores, color palettes, or logos, the in-store experience is functionally the exact same. And on the other end of the spectrum, and the more concerning, is those that are still reinforcing the stigma that we're trying to get away from as an industry in general, and that's that head shop, flag in the window. So what we recognize through that is there's a tremendous white space opportunity to do something unique and different. And we hired a world-class creative design firm to help us address this white space opportunity. And the concept that we came up with, it's called Prairie Records. And what Prairie Records is really a reinvention of the cannabis purchasing experience that leverages the instinctual tie of recreational cannabis and music in a sophisticated yet approachable environment. Everybody has a relationship with music, and it's through that relationship and Prairie Records that we think we can engage and align with consumers in a way that our competitors can't.
So basically the experience is you're walking into what appeared to all intents and purposes to be a music store with lots of rows of what looks like albums. Each of those has, I guess, imagery that you're still a little restricted on what you can present there. It's no like surfboards and parties and stuff. It's mountains and it's mostly sort of demure backgrounds, but you've got some space there for the branding. You've got some space for the LP itself, the space to explain to somebody what they're getting if they purchase this product, which is the complete opposite of the retail experience across the country when dealing with the usually restrictive rules.
But, you know, the Canadian cannabis retail experience is unlike any other retail experience in the world. And what I mean by that is it's highly restrictive. So when you go into a store today, all the products behind lock and key, so you can't touch or feel the product. It's very limited what you can do in store. In some places, you can't even sell merchandise. You're limited what you can say to the consumer. So I think what the challenge facing every retailer is, how do you create, in this regulated environment, a tactile, engaging, and educational consumer shopping experience? And that's exactly what we deliver with Pirate Records. So when you come into our store, you'll see everything you'd find in the Apple Store of Canvas. You'll see that all the digital assets, digital menu billboards, sales associates with iPads. But we take it one step further, and we leverage this concept of music and cannabis, and we use records as a tactile medium to showcase brands and product information for the consumer. So it's like, it looks like a record. You can pick it up. It actually has a record in it. It's got an LP's branding right on it. So all of the packaging and branding information that an LP would have wanted to put on the packaging of their product, but they can't, we can actually do that in store on their behalf and provide dimension to the brand and provide the consumer this tactile and engaging experience where they can come in and pick something up and read about it in an environment where nobody's really been able to replicate that for the consumer.
When I first learned about the strategy here, my first thought was Health Canada will jump on this and prevent it from being something that can be done, simply because they're party poopers and they get in the way of seemingly everything that would advance the industry. But I guess what you're actually doing here is you've disassociated the album from the product itself, right? The album doesn't contain the product, and thus your ability to be a bit more creative with what's on it, it doesn't get tied down in those same restrictions as the actual packaging proper, right?
That's absolutely correct. Really what the record is, it's just a giant brand card.
Right.
And if you go to a lot of other retail stores, you will often find, you know, next to the smell jar, you'll find a piece of information about the product. But what we do is we provide a much larger medium. We allow the LPs to actually put their branding on it. We allow them to put, you know, co-curated content on the back. Obviously, everything that's on that needs to be compliant with the federal and provincial advertising restrictions governing cannabis retail. Mm-hmm. So everything we're doing is compliant, and we're not changing the packaging. We're just creating, you know, a new medium for the consumer to learn about a product, mm-hmm. rather than come into a store and just read off a fairly ambiguous menu where, you know, there's all of these strain names that for the average consumer or new consumer don't infer anything about the product. Mm-hmm. We take it one step further, Chris. We actually take all of that information that's on the record and we shrink it down into a smaller medium, about one-fifth the size. And we put it in the package at the point of sale as, you know, an information, piece of information for the consumer. We also are planning to put QR codes that link to Spotify playlists that are, you know, consistent with our brand thematic around music and cannabis. And it's a way to engage the consumer outside of the store.
So basically, if you come in and say, I'm in the mood for, I want to dance with somebody or wake me up before you go, you're sharing with the person in store, like, this is what the mood I'm looking for, and can get guidance from there.
Yeah, we're trying to break down the categorization of just indica sativa hybrid,
right,
and really trying to link, you know, experiences to particular cannabis strains.
Right.
You might come in and find a lullaby section, which would infer kind of a more relaxing effect, or you might find a dance section, which is, you know, something that maybe it's a higher sativa that you would enjoy consuming before, you know, going out for the evening. Uh-huh. So there's a lot of creative ways that we can infer things around the product in a market that's really regulated and you're really limited what you can say to the consumer.
So as I'm talking to you, I'm on the BC Cannabis Stores website, and the only information you really get is THC levels, CBD levels, and strain names. Now, if I'm grandma and I don't know what Alpine Breeze is and I click on it, it just tells me basically what strains it came from. And it doesn't say, hey, this might staple you to the couch. It doesn't say it might get you out of bed in the morning. It doesn't say it might help you with your back. You're really sort of floating around in this atmosphere of just try it already. And if it works for you, then great. You can come back and buy more. But I don't think most people who are, especially medical users, really are that interested in experimentation. They're looking for information, in which your model seems to be much better in actually imparting.
You're exactly right, Chris. And I find the online kind of government-run websites, and to a large extent, a lot of the stores that are open today, it's a very confusing experience. It's not educational. It's not welcoming. It's hard to differentiate brands. It's hard to differentiate experiences. And, you know, that's really what we built the whole Prairie Records retail concept around, was being able to provide the consumer educational information, a tactile shopping experience, and giving the LPs and ourselves an opportunity to showcase their brands and give them dimension and bring them to life in an environment where if you just lined up all of the packaging of the products, it's so undifferentiated, it's really hard to tell what's what. But when you come into our store, you will find brands, you'll find information, you'll find unique categorization for products that's unreplicated elsewhere.
Yeah. So along those lines, clearly you've got some buy-in from some LPs who I think clearly see the value in what you're doing. Tilray's invested some millions into you. Vivo's invested some millions. Delta 9 was working with you early on your extraction facility and has converted that into stock in the company. These are big companies that do a significant amount of due diligence, and I'm guessing didn't sling $3 to $5 million at you on a whim.
You know, we've been able to attract investment from some of the largest global players in cannabis, and I think it's a true testament and validation of our business plan and, you know, a testament in their confidence in our ability to execute and deliver.
Indeed. So the Delta 9 situation, early on, they were helping, engineer the facilities and then converted that to selling their interest into shares in your company. I've seen online people sort of characterize that as, hey, Delta 9's bailed out, that it's a negative thing. But I actually kind of think that converting it into stock in your company is the opposite of that. They seem to be convinced that there's something here.
Delta 9's been a great partner to us. And, you know, we made the strategic decision to consolidate our interest in that facility as, you know, we are building a really large scale infrastructure project there. It's, you know, 60,000 square foot building. It'll be one of Canada's largest processing, extraction, R&D, product formulation, manufacturing, and fulfillment centers. And despite us taking Delta 9 out of the project, we still have a very healthy relationship with them and hope to contract manufacture on their behalf to create really high quality and consistent derivative products.
Now, talk to me about the origins of the company, because I know that back in the day, the Thunderchild First Nation made a big investment in this project, and that you're on Thunderchild land. What advantages or disadvantages does that relationship bring?
Yeah, Thunderchild is one of our earliest partners and actually largest investors. And what's unique about that relationship is really the authentic relationship that exists between Westleaf and Thunderchild. One of our founding partners has had, you know, a decade-long relationship with them in an advisory capacity, helping them with a number of economic development opportunities. And they had a strong interest to be in cannabis. And so we partnered to build a large-scale cultivation facility on lands they own in the municipality of Battleford, Saskatchewan. It's about an hour and a half north of Saskatoon, which is the largest city in Saskatchewan. And really the idea there was, you know, we're trying to create as many high-quality career opportunities for Thunderchild and other First Nations in Saskatchewan.
They've got to be happy with the way that investment has worked out in terms of value so far.
Absolutely. And it, really the investment is, you know, goes beyond just making a return. It's really about creating opportunities to put people to work and give them meaningful career opportunities. And that's exactly our intent with that project.
So on the retail side, it's been a little more difficult to establish retail chains in Canada than one might have thought initially, with a lot of the provinces going toward a centralized provincial liquor distribution model rather than the free reign of capitalism. With so many provinces sort of relying on lotteries or a system like in BC where no one really knows exactly what's happening, how do you steer your company for growth in that environment?
Chris, the retail segment has been the most challenging component of the entire value chain to aggregate in quality and scale. Every province is different. And then even within provinces like Alberta, for example, each city or municipality has a different development process to obtain a development permit to operate a cannabis retail store. I mean, we've done a really good job. We were early movers to aggregate real estate. And the reality is the land grab in Western Canada is over. We did a big acquisition early this year where we consolidated a Canadian cannabis retailer called Candera. And what that did was bring in additional scale and really complementary locations that are consistent with our strategy of only pursuing tier one premium real estate in densely populated and tourist areas. Mm-hmm.
And what has that resulted in a little bit down the line? How does that decision pan out?
That's been great. I mean, we have one of the largest and most premium portfolios of cannabis retail landscape in Western Canada. And, you know, we're well on track to deliver our guidance of between 30 and 50 locations through the end of 2020. We expect to have upwards of 25 constructed prior to the end of this year. And, you know, we have one operating today. We have two more under construction in Saskatoon, and we have a number of locations in Alberta that are just commencing construction. So
let's dig into that a little bit, because there are a lot of companies around that promote themselves as having 50 leases or 80 leases. And I guess the average investor isn't really sure of what that means. Is that a lease on a property that doesn't yet have permission to operate? Or is that leases on properties where the permission has been requested? Or how does it actually function?
Yeah, so it's really not about leases, Chris. It's about development permits. Okay. Once you secure a development permit, it gives you the right to open a cannabis retail store. And often in markets like Alberta, it gives you, you know, sometimes a 300 meter or 200 meter buffer where other cannabis retailers can't operate. So the key to cannabis retail is development permits, not leases. And, you know, all of the guidance that I've communicated for this year of upwards of 25 locations, those all have secured development permits on them.
Okay.
And, you know, our approach has really been a quality over quantity approach. We really only want to be in tier one premium real estate with the right cost structure where we can over-index on profitability. We'll only do as many locations as we can find that fit that criteria. And we're very disciplined in our modeling and analysis of where we want to locate our brand. And our brand does skew to the premium and higher end. And we want to be in real estate that's reflective of that.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast with your host, Chris Perry.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes. You can do it through Google Play. You can do it through all the places. Equity Guru podcast. Do it now. Welcome
back. So the development permits are one thing, but then there's also the provincial permission to operate. That's a lot more of a tricky process in a lot of places than others. Alberta, it's clearly a little bit more straightforward than it has been in, say, BC. In terms of your growth, is that where you see the potential going forward? Is in those provinces where you don't have to go and wait out a lottery or buy someone who won a lottery, that you can just say, look, we're legitimate. Here's how we operate. Here's our background checks. Here's where we get our materials from. Give us our license.
As you rightfully point out, in addition to a development permit, you do need regulatory authority from the various provinces. And that's a really long and intensive process. We've successfully navigated that in the provinces that we're operating in. Obviously, we were successful in the lottery in Saskatchewan. We got a permit in Warman. And what that allowed us to do is get through due diligence with the regulator and then position us to acquire other locations. So we acquired two locations in Saskatoon under an option to purchase. And Saskatoon is, in our opinion, one of the best markets in Canada to operate private retail, from a scarcity of licenses to population density and also market structure. Mm-hmm. We then went on and acquired another permit under an option to purchase in Swift Current. And we have a very robust portfolio in Alberta, and we're selectively acquiring locations in BC. So we're really a Western Canada prairie play and trying to operate in markets and scale that allow us to be vertically integrated and that allow us to, you know, sell our own products to consumers.
So I guess the strategy is to find physical locations where the local council is not going to get in your way, and then to use your corporate structure and your knowledge and your experience and your reputation to either acquire the licenses themselves for those locations or purchase them from others that have managed to navigate that system.
Yeah, we've been very active in the communities that we plan to operate in. We go in and meet with, you know, local town and council. We've been a wealth of information early in the development of the rollout of cannabis retail, ultimately to position ourselves as a group that communities want us operating there. And that's a key ingredient to the success of us being able to aggregate the portfolio that we have.
Clearly, there's a lot of hurdles that need to be jumped in the various levels of bureaucracy that can be involved in this. I mean, you certainly in Calgary right now, as I think I noted in my article, that there have been issues regarding like distances that cannabis retailers need to be between themselves and other facilities, whether they be cannabis or otherwise. And those change sometimes. Tell me about the experience in Calgary right now.
Yeah, Calgary was unique. So on, I believe it was April 22nd of last year, they opened up the portal for all prospective retailers to apply for a development permit for cannabis retail. And it was on a first-come, first-served basis. We were proactive and we were able to secure every development permit that we applied for. And then what happened is a number of them got appealed, and they got appealed by competitors. We're not first in line to get a development permit. And you know, we spent a lot of money and a lot of time fighting those rather frivolous appeals, and we prevailed in every instance.
So it just goes to show, though, that anyone who comes along and says, we're going to create a retail cannabis chain across the country, either has to have their ducks really in a row and be prepared to do a lot of hard work to get there, or they're full of shit.
Absolutely, Chris. As I said, the land grab in Western Canada is effectively over. You know, you can selectively aggregate locations, but to do it in scale, I think you really have to do it in M&A. Uh-huh. Now, Ontario is obviously an emerging market for privatized retail, and you know, it's been a slow process for them to roll out and a rather volatile process, but that's really the next big growth area for privatized retailers in Canada.
Uh-huh. Are you planning to engage in Ontario to either buy up lottery winners or engage in future lotteries, or is the West Coast really the best coast for you right now?
Yeah, the West Coast has been our focus to date. We do have a strategy to enter Ontario, obviously compliant with the provincial regulations that govern LP ownership there. We have some great real estate secured, and we announced a partnership back in November with a group called Ace Valley, which is a really well-known brand. I believe it's one of the top-selling cannabis brands actually in Ontario currently through OCS. And we've partnered to bring the Ace Valley retail experience to downtown Toronto. So we've secured some real estate right across from Trinity Bellwoods Park, which in our opinion is one of the best locations in Canada from a population density and demographics for cannabis retail. And we intend to pursue that. Obviously, you know, we'll be in a more of a minority ownership position there, and really looking at, you know, Ontario cannabis retail as an opportunity for us to build a brand and sell product, not so much, you know, capture margin on retail in the way that we're doing in Western Canada.
Got it. All right, let's move to share structure. A lot of companies that are new on the markets sometimes get in a bit of a trap where a lot of money's been raised, comes free trading in 4 months, and the stock takes a bit of a hit. Your particular company, you guys raised a lot of money, and it all comes free trading pretty much at the same time. What is the strategy? And I know there is one because you see this coming as much as anybody. What is the strategy towards buffering the stock and making it so that people, rather than wanting to take their profits, can see bigger profits in the short-term future?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Chris. And like our company is actually pretty tightly held. I think it's close to 40% of it's held by management, insiders, and strategics. And much like all new public companies, especially those that are actively engaged in M&A, which we've done four notable M&A transactions in Q1 alone, you know, face escrow releases over time. And, you know, we're well positioned, and we do have a strategy to ensure that we absorb that selling pressure and, you know, keep a healthy stock and trading volume.
So as we get closer to that, what is it, April, May free trading point, the company's not going to be sitting on its laurels, that you're going to be looking out there to drop news and to demonstrate that the best is yet to come.
Absolutely. We're out there every day, you know, working hard to deliver value. And there's a number of strategic opportunities that we're pursuing, and stay tuned.
Your share price brings a pretty significant market cap right now. It's a pretty decent wedge to go shopping with. Would the plan be to use that stock as a currency to go out and bring in more?
My background, Chris, I come from the private equity and asset management business. My other co-founder comes from private equity and M&A as well. So it's always been a cornerstone of our strategy to leverage our expertise in doing good deals to continue creating value for Westleaf and our shareholders.
Certainly in the US right now, you look at companies like MedMen that are acquiring dispensaries in the middle of nowhere for $30, $40, $50, $100 million. The Canadian space, I'm guessing the price tags are not as heavy as they are down south, even though the market is as restricted as it is. Do you get the sense that there will be a point where the activity for mergers and acquisitions heats up to the point where the cost of doing business now is far superseded by what it might be 3 or 6 months down the line?
Yeah, I think what we've seen in the U.S. is just a much more mature market. So often you're, you know, pursuing M&A opportunities that have a history of, you know, revenue and cash flow behind them that you can anchor that valuation. You know, we've just started in the legalization of cannabis in Canada, and we don't have a lot of, you know, really good data out there in terms of retail profitability. So I think over time, you'll definitely see M&A eat up in retail.
So if you manage to get lucky in Ontario and you're sitting on a license, the price tag that you're looking for, ballpark, what is that looking at right now?
We were very live and had our hat in the ring on a number of opportunities to acquire a license. At the end of the day, the valuations were just astronomical and didn't really make sense to us because really, in our opinion, what you're buying is a maybe a 6 month to 12 month head start before that market moves to a true free market enterprise. Uh-huh. And you know, we take a very disciplined and value oriented approach to our M&A, and we just couldn't get our heads around the valuations that some of these licenses were trading for.
Someone will go out there and make it a big market play that they've paid through the nose for something that doesn't make any money yet. Do you think that long-term your strategy beats that strategy on the market?
Yeah, I mean, we've been very disciplined, Chris, in our approach, especially on cannabis retail, to ensure that, you know, we set the cost structure up correctly for the business long-term to be able to compete. Mm-hmm. And we're not in the business of doing bad deals. We really want to build a company that can compete long-term. You know, that's why we're pursuing a vertically integrated strategy so we can defensively position our business to capture margin across the entire value chain through the maturation of the business. We're really the only company next to Canopy that's pursuing all three verticals in cultivation, processing, extraction, and retail at the same time. And I think that's one of the most differentiated and unique aspects of our story is we will have distribution for our product. And distribution is going to matter immensely when this market gets to a more balanced or oversupplied marketplace. Mm-hmm. And those that can tell a brand story, those that can engage with the consumer and build brands, will compete long term. And that's exactly what our business plan delivers.
The opening month or so of your first store, what does that look like in terms of money in, money out? Is it profitable from the outset? Is it not intended to be? Is it more a growth situation? What does it look like?
Yeah, we've only been operating there a couple of weeks, Chris, but what we are launching very soon is our e-commerce platform. And that location that we have in Warman has been designed to not only be a brick and mortar store, but it's also a warehouse facility and has one of the largest secure storage vaults in the province of Saskatchewan. So our strategy there is actually to retail to the entire province out of that location. And it's 15 minutes from the largest airport in Saskatchewan, and we're positioning to do delivery direct to consumer. And I think that'll prove to be a very profitable segment of the retail market in Saskatchewan.
Thus, the value of being in Saskatchewan rather than, say, Ontario, where you're not permitted to do the online stuff so much.
Well, Saskatchewan is the best market from a cannabis retail perspective to operate in because there's no provincial wholesaler. It allows you to do supply deals direct with licensed producers. It allows you to retail online. It gives you a lot more flexibility on curating a unique product selection. So we're really excited about the Saskatchewan market. We're going to be operating there in scale, and we have some of the best locations in the province in Saskatoon that are opening shortly.
I think when people look at your company, they see you very much as a retail play, maybe to the expense of understanding what's behind that on in terms of production. If you could just quickly summarize, like, what is the other end of Westleaf look like?
So Westleaf is much more than a cannabis retailer. So we're vertically integrated, which means we have large scale cultivation. And what's unique to the Westleaf story is actually the people behind us. So, you know, we have four individuals that came out of the largest operator of cannabis assets globally and started their careers in the medical cannabis industry in Colorado. And collectively, this team has designed 48 cultivation facilities. They've operated 24. and they've stood up 12 from design, construction, through to operational implementation. So what they bring to Westleaf is a demonstrated track record of operating and scaling multiple vertically integrated cannabis platforms. And we've taken all of the best practices and learnings from those individuals and applied them to the facility we're developing in Saskatchewan. So we are not intended to be, you know, a super large scale cultivator. Where we're trying to compete is super high quality, indoor grown flower, more craft-like style, and ultimately sell that through our distribution.
So secondly, securing your own supply chain rather than relying on the supply chains of others, which would be the normal retail dispensary model.
I just think that the retail in this highly regulated environment is such a unique opportunity where it's really hard to build brands because of the packaging and advertising restrictions. Yeah. And if we own retail and we own the consumer, why not position our own products to sell them?
Sure. And I'm guessing that the part of your market cap right now is based on the people behind the group who've, you know, been there, done that, understand how to get an application through to Health Canada, how to deal with Health Canada and not get yourself in trouble, how to grow products, which is seemingly a struggle for a lot of LPs even today. It's just having a license isn't enough, really. It seems like you have to be one of the noble few that have already made the mistakes for other people.
Well, I think growing cannabis is a lot harder than people think. And we have a team that's been there and done it and that has achieved industry-leading yields and that can cultivate and grow a really high-quality product. And I think we're uniquely positioned to compete. And I think that's why the market is valuing us the way they are.
Does being located on First Nations land, does that allow you to do things that might not be doable in other settings? I'm looking at like things like online sales. You know, is that possible from a First Nations-based facility in a way that wouldn't be necessarily elsewhere?
Our intention is to operate within the guidelines that are outlaid from the federal and provincial governments.
Sure.
So going through the exact same regulatory and development process that everyone else does. And again, really the thought behind locating a cultivation facility on First Nations land, even though it's in a large municipality in Saskatchewan, was really the desire to create an opportunity for the First Nations to put as many people to work in high quality and meaningful employment opportunities.
That's a good intent in and of itself. Is there a part of your deal that you think is still sort of an unknown? Like a lot of companies, they have the pitch, they have the, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to get there. But there's usually like one unknown factor that if they can push through it, will really sort of let them get to where they want to be. Is there one thing that you're kind of waiting on that gets you there?
I think the biggest thing for us, Chris, and you mentioned this at the beginning, was there aren't a lot of eyes on our story today.
Yeah.
So what we're really trying to do is just tell our story because we are one of the few truly vertically integrated companies that has a team with a demonstrated track record of doing this, operating and building high quality cultivation. We have one of the largest R&D processing, extraction and fulfillment centers. We have really good intellectual capital around product formulation, and we got a great retail team. And the only other company in the space that's pursuing a similar strategy at scale is Canopy.
I guess when you've got three significant names out there in Delta 9, Tilray, and Vivo that have backed you with hardcore dollars, that's got to tell the average consumer something.
Absolutely. I think it's a strong testament of our strategy and, more importantly, a strong testament in the people behind Westleaf and their confidence in our ability to execute.
Well, I look forward to seeing what's coming over the next few months. The new stores that are under construction now, when's the timeline on those opening their doors?
Our next two locations are going to be located in Saskatoon, and we're planning grand openings for both of them on 420, April 20th.
That's going to be a big day.
Absolutely. And I would encourage all the listeners out there to visit our retail website, www.prairierecords.ca, to learn more about the retail concept and check out our new corporate website at westleaf.com.
I will say that when I looked at your website, it all started really making a lot more sense when I began to see like how you're presenting the albums and how the store is laid out. It really appears to me to be something much more in tune with the other 95% of people out there who are interested in seeing what cannabis has to offer, but don't want to be talking to guys in affliction t-shirts with neck tattoos when they do it.
I know the best way to see the concept come to life is actually check out our Instagram, which is at Prairie Records. And you can follow us on there for all the developments of our store openings. And there's some great photos of in-store that really bring the concept to life.
Excellent. Well, thanks for talking to us today. And we'll touch base again in the months ahead as the story unfolds. If anyone wants more information, go to see the Prairie Records website. Or WL is the ticker symbol. Go and check out all the news as it drops. Thanks, man.
Thanks so much, Chris. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.